seconds. Bryant for the win.
Interviews from your favorite local coaches and athletes.
He's getting to the basket of will, and he's hitting that three-point shot with some consistency now, and he's just in a groove right now where he's pretty well unstoppable.
Hall of Fame and legendary guests.
I was driven by loving to play, liking the challenge of being an NFL quarterback, but after 18 years, I was 1 month short of 39 years old. It's time to go.
Analysis and insight on the latest national sports topics. Live, it's Drive Time Sports with Jordan Buscarini on KOAL 107.3 FM and 7:50 AM.
We've gotten to the end of the week. Congratulations. Sometimes that's tough to do. Welcome to a brand new edition of Drive Time Sports. I'm your host, Jordan Buscarini. I'll tell you, I feel rejuvenated as far as the world of sports is concerned, just because we have baseball back. It's not just the NBA. It's not just March Madness. We have another sport, and the NFL is heating up. It's a great, great time to follow sports, even on the local end. Love high school baseball. Love high school softball. We're going to talk local softball on the show today. We're going to be joined by Carbon Lady Dino softball coach Kurt Nunley. If you haven't followed the Lady Dino so far this year, you're missing out. This is a team that is just loaded. They are playing such good ball. And I know it's been a quiet week due to spring break, but Carbon's going to pick up the action next week. They return to the field on Tuesday, so we're going to talk to Coach Kurt Nunley about that. That's coming up on the show. Also today, we've got to talk takeaways from Major League Baseball Day 1. We have to. Opening day is so exciting. I've said a million times it should be a national holiday here in this country. What were some of the big takeaways? World Series champs suffering a loss to the Rockies. The Giants-Mariners last night was like a train wreck. Like, I couldn't turn the TV off. I had to watch the end of that game. The way the Giants blew that. And a walk-off walk to end that game. Also in the AL, there were some dynamic performances. Zach Greinke was phenomenal. Bieber was fantastic as well. So there's a lot to get into as far as Major League Baseball. We're going to hit that. And tomorrow, it's the Final Four. UCLA, Gonzaga, Houston taking on Baylor. Like I said, it's a fun weekend as far as sports is concerned. So we'll get into all that and more in just a bit. Let's start by talking about the breaking news. Well, it was breaking about 3 hours ago. And you should know this about me by now. I hate talking politics here on Drive Time Sports. I hate it. I can count on my hand the amount of times we've done it. And I've gotten a lot of questions as to why I won't address political topics on this show. You don't want me to. Trust me, you don't want me to. I'm here to talk sports. That's what I want to talk about. Now, I didn't grow up wanting to be a political sports talk show host. That was never it. I wanted to talk sports. I wanted to dissect sports. That's what I've always wanted to do. But every now and then, a specific topic pops up, and there's no way you cannot combine the two. And it's unfortunate. I hate those topics. But today, look, it was one of those instances where the two mixed. Major League Baseball made the announcement that they are moving the 2021 All-Star Game out of Atlanta in response to a new Georgia law that has civil rights groups up in arms. And look, again, I'm not going to go into the logistics of it, but the idea of voter suppression, I guess that's what the topic is. That's the big reason as to why you have civil rights groups up in arms over this bill that was passed in Georgia. So Major League Baseball comes out, they release a statement. Commissioner Rob Manfred, who I do not like. This guy's the worst commissioner in professional sports by a mile. Say what you will about Roger Goodell. Hockey fans, say what you will about Gary Bettman. Adam Silver's been phenomenal. I mean, look at the work that he's done over the last couple of years. Rob Manfred is the worst commissioner in any professional major sport in this country. He said today, quote, the league is finalizing. Here's the quote. A new host city and details about these events will be announced shortly. He continued by saying, over the last week, we have engaged in a thoughtful conversation with clubs, former and current players, the Players Association, and the Players Alliance, among others, to listen to their views. Major League Baseball fundamentally supports voting rights for all Americans and opposes restrictions to the ballot box. That's just a quick quote of the lengthy statement that was made from Rob Manfred. The Atlanta Braves, as an organization, they are not happy with it. They released a statement, and of course the Braves are upset. Regardless of your thoughts on the bill passed in Georgia, the Braves organization had nothing to do with any legislation being passed by the government, and this franchise and its fans are the ones that are being affected by Major League Baseball. I think this is bad for Major League Baseball. That was the big storyline circulating today, and with that being said, I don't want to talk anymore about it. I really don't. There's no All-Star game taking place in Georgia. That's the news coming out today. If you're a Utah Jazz fan, there is some good news as we transition quickly over to the NBA. Donovan Mitchell, who was not with the team earlier this week, said his fear of flying would not prevent him from joining the Jazz on future road trips. This guy does not like flying. He didn't like it when he was going through the workout process during his rookie season. He made note of it. That was the worst part of it. He said he loved everything. He loved going from team to team. He hated flying. And the Jazz, of course, had this scare over the week that was somewhat terrifying for these players. I mean, they really thought there was going to be a serious problem. Donovan Mitchell stayed put in Salt Lake. The rest of the team traveled to Memphis. Jazz took care of business. Their next road game is now scheduled Monday against Dallas. That's a 5 p.m. tip-off. Donovan Mitchell will be there as the Jazz travel back on the road. Now, as far as the schedule in the NBA goes tonight, we will have Utah Jazz basketball as they play host to the Chicago Bulls. Start time for that game is set for 7 o'clock, and live coverage will begin at 6:50. I'm jumping all the way around. Let's go back to Major League Baseball for just a moment because we did have one day baseball game. Yesterday was a complete utter tease, wasn't it? And we had all this day baseball, and then today we get one game, and the Orioles take care of the Red Sox, who just could not find the rhythm offensively. They couldn't get base runners. That was it. I think Kike Hernandez was the only player to record a hit for the Boston Red Sox going into the ninth inning. It was just not a good day for the Red Sox. Short slate of baseball games today, but one day game, and that was Baltimore and Boston. We have a lot I want to get into, so we're going to break right now. When we return, we're going to be joined over the phone by Coach Kurt Nunley. We'll also talk my takeaways from opening day, plus we'll preview tomorrow's Final Four. That's coming up here on Drive Time Sports.
There's no crying in baseball!
Prepare the water cooler, that we may gather around it later and discuss things. Play ball!
It's time for the Coach's Corner on Drive Time Sports.
Holy cow!
For Corbin High School right now, spring break is actually wrapping up. Most of the sports will make their return next week, including the Corbin Lady Dino softball team. This squad has been on a tear to start the season. 9-1, unbeaten in region play. Their lone loss was an extra innings defeat on the road against Manti. It has been a phenomenal year so far for the Lady Dino softball squad. They return to the field on Tuesday to take on a very good Grand squad, and we're going to talk about that more right now with our next guest. Joining us over the phone, manager Kurt Nunley. Coach, always a pleasure. Thank you again.
Hey, thank you, Jordan, for having me. Appreciate it.
Yeah, always look forward to the conversations, Coach. And I know it's spring break, so things have kind of settled down for this team. You guys basically get a full week off. And I know before we talk about the way the first of the season went, let's talk about giving those girls a week off. You guys were playing so well. You've won 9 out of 10 games. And sometimes it seems like a spring break could be exactly what a team needs. But in this case, when you're rolling, I'm sure you want to keep playing.
Yeah, we do. And you know, I'd be lying if I didn't say I wasn't nervous about Tuesday's game against Grand. Grand's a really good team. You know, they're in our region. They're one of the top five teams in 3A right now. And so having this week off of spring break makes me way nervous, especially coming into that game on Tuesday with only having one day of practice. Before I let the girls go for spring break, I did encourage all of them that they needed to be out doing things on their own, throwing, hitting, you know, if they could get together and, you know, do some ground balls, you know, just kind of keep sharp. So when Tuesday comes around, you know, we're still having that, you know, our foot to the gas pedal, I should say.
Mm-hmm.
Keep running with it and keep going. So right now a little nervous with it being spring break, and hopefully we'll have a really good practice on Monday to prepare for ourselves for Grand on Tuesday.
Well, Coach, let's go back to last week. Three games. You guys close out the first half of the season with a win over Emory 13-5. You top Grantsville 4-3 in eight innings in a game that was just thrilling. And then you guys blast through Richfield. And so you had three games to kind of build a little bit more momentum, maybe some more confidence heading into that spring break. And all three games were a little bit different. I mean, we're talking about a blowout over Richfield, a hard-fought game against Grantsville, and then you get a rivalry game against Emory. Seems like that was just a really solid week of play for these girls.
It was, you know, and these girls are a good bunch of girls, a very talented bunch of girls, and, you know, coming out with Richfield and beating Richfield the way that they did, and then coming to Grantsville, and Grantsville's a really good team. They've got a strong program. They've always had a strong program, you know, year in and year out. I've been at Carbon for 14 years now, and as far as I understand it, that was the first time that Carbon has ever beaten Grantsville in the 14 years that I've been there. I mean, that just shows you how strong of a softball program Grantsville has, and we went up there, and Grantsville has a really good pitcher. They seem like they always have really good pitchers, but our girls, they come out and they put 12 hits on her throughout the game. And that's one thing that I've noticed about the Dino softball team this year is how good of an offense we have. And it was great to see these girls be able to put the bat on a ball against a really, really good pitcher. And, you know, we also had a good pitcher that day with Haven at the mound and her striking out 18 girls in that game. It was just a pitcher's duel the whole entire game. I was really, really happy, really excited that these girls got this win against Grantsville coming out with a win there. And then on Friday, you know, playing Emory, you're always going to come in to a rivalry game, and it's always going to be a good game. I mean, it's just going to be a tough game throughout the day, throughout the whole time. And, you know, with Carbon and Emory being the rivalry that it is, the intensity in that game is always going to be high. I'm just glad that our girls came out on top on that one on Friday as well. So, you know, winning three games last week, coming out 3-0 for the week, leading into spring break, is a very good confidence booster for our team.
Coach, it's hard to nitpick when you're 9-1. I mean, and you guys have played a very difficult schedule too. There's context to that 9-1 start. But one of the things that has stood out to me, and I guess this is a negative, at times there have been short lapses. I mean, in the Emory game, there was a four-run inning. We go back to the Manti game, the lone loss of the season. There was just couldn't really close out that contest. And even looking at Grantsville, they did the bulk of their damage in one inning as well. What can you contribute that to? What do you attribute that to?
Well, that's a really, really good question. We could also say that we were up on Manti as well. You know, we went up early on Manti 2-0. You know, and then went up on them, you know, 8-5 going into the bottom of the seventh inning. And then, you know, obviously Manti came back and beat us in the bottom of the seventh. And, you know, going up, you know, 5-0 on Emory. And then they come back and they scored four runs on us and, you know, 5-4. And then we were up 3-0 on Grantsville. And then Grantsville comes back and ties it. You know, that's just the name of the softball. That's the good thing about softball is it's just a quick game. There's a lot of offense involved with softball. There's a lot of things that can happen when it comes to softball. So obviously, the mental game, you know, that is something that really, really, is part of that game. And sometimes you have those mental mistakes, and when you have those mental mistakes, that can cause you to have the teams come right back into the game. I'm always teaching the girls and telling the girls, you know, once you get a lead, you just got to make sure that you maintain that lead. You got to keep scoring. You got to keep pounding it into them. Don't let them come back. And sometimes that just doesn't happen. It's just, you know, the way the ball bounces, you get errors, you know, physical errors, but also mental errors. And so, you know, those are things that can happen towards a game. You know, coaches' errors. You know, me as a coach, I'm learning throughout the process as well. I even have errors during the game. I'm not perfect. You know, just like the players, coaches do have errors too. So, you know, those things come into a part where it makes teams come back and, you know, make it a game out of it.
Again, our guest right now is Coach Kurt Nunley, again, of the Carbon Lady Dinos softball squad. Coach, we'll talk about individual performances. And we knew going into the year that it would be a special one for Lindsay Madrigal. Of course, she's already signed to play softball at Salt Lake Community College. But even knowing it was going to be a special year, she's betting 700 on the season. She has as many home runs as she has singles. When's the last time you saw someone demand this type of respect at the plate and really the presence that she has? I mean, it's been phenomenal over the first 10 games.
I'm telling you, Jordan, you know, being a coach of you know, that caliber of a player, I'm telling you, it's a blessing to coach someone like her. I mean, she's quite a player. Just you can tell that she's put a lot of effort into playing the game of softball. You know, she's the type of player that when she gets up to the plate, you as a coach are just smiling from ear to ear, just because the way that she hits the ball, she hits it a ton, she hits it hard. I believe pitchers are scared when they have her come up to the plate because they know how good of a hitter she is. You know, with her batting the way that she is, that just shows, you know, the time, the effort that she's put in. I'm sure, you know, her dad, Sip, has went out and practiced with her a lot. You know, she's put a lot of effort into it with her traveling team that she plays on during the summer. You know, it just shows when a player puts effort into their game how much success they can have. And she's, you know, quite a testimony to everyone that when you put good effort into it, these are the results you'll have.
Yeah, and I mean, outside of Lindsay, she's got a great supporting cast, Coach. You got like 6 or 7 girls betting over 500 right now.
Oh, I'm telling you, Jordan, this team that I have this year, they are so talented. You know, offensively, you know, hitting, you know, 1 through 9. I mean, it's just a blessing to be, you know, coaching these talented young women. I mean, there's just so much talent with these girls. And I've coached a lot of talent before in the past, but when it comes to hitting, I believe this is the most talented young ladies that I've coached when it comes to just being hitters 1 through 9. But, and, you know, these girls, they love softball. They put a lot of effort into softball. You know, Lindsay's not the only one that puts a lot of effort into it. I mean, there's a lot of these girls on this team that have traveling teams. You know, their fathers, their mothers put a lot of time and effort into these players. And so when you see, you know, girls putting a lot of effort into a sport, the success that you see is because of the effort and the work that they put in and the way that their parents have really, you know, put the time and money into it as well. It's just really neat to see how offensively we are and the runs that we've been putting up this whole year. Just a good bunch of girls, good talented girls.
Again, Coach Kurt Nunley, our guest right now. Coach, it's always a pleasure to get you on and talk about how the team is faring. Enjoy your spring break or what's left of it, and best of luck on Tuesday, and I'm sure we'll catch up again real soon.
Appreciate it, Jordan. Thanks again.
Again, that's Kurt Nunley, manager of the Carbon Lady Dinos softball team. Again, they'll return to the field next week to take on the Grand Red Devils. We've got a break for just a moment. More coming up. We'll talk Major League Baseball opening day now in the books, and we'll also preview tomorrow's Final Four. UCLA, Gonzaga, Baylor, Houston. The Bruins looking to make NCAA history. You know, they're not the first team to get to the Final Four after playing in the first four. But typically, the Final Four doesn't fare well for those squads. We'll talk about that and more when we return. It's right here on Drive Time Sports.
In 5, 4, 3, 2.
I'm Joe Wade Formicola, and you're listening to Drive Time Sports with Jordan Buscarini.
Real name, no gimmicks.
on 750 AM, KOAL.
So I came to the grave, real name, no gimmicks. That's why I ain't got no.
We have one game down and 161 to go in the Major League Baseball season. Only one day game today. Boston and Baltimore opening up the regular season. They did not play yesterday. That game was postponed. Took the Red Sox a little while to get some hits moving in that contest. But we only had one day baseball game, and so there's not a whole lot to talk about on that end. But there is plenty of hyperbole to get into as we take a look at the big takeaways of opening day. Because I'm a firm believer that when it comes to Major League Baseball, you have three sets of fans. And I love all three, by the way. I love all three. You have the casual fan that really gets up for opening day. Because we haven't had baseball since October. So you really, really get up for opening day. And you'll follow baseball with great intent for about 2 to 3 weeks. Newness wears off. You'll pick it back up midsummer around the All-Star break. I get it. I understand that type of fan. Because a 162-game season is a grind. It's a marathon. Okay, you have another set of fans that just love statistics. You love the numbers, and I get that too. Fantasy baseball's a hoot. And then you have your hardcore fan who follows everything, be it winter meetings, you're following roster cuts from last week. I mean, you eat, sleep, and drink baseball. And there are takeaways that all three categories of those fans will run with today. So let me give you some of my takeaways from what I saw on opening day. And the best place to start is with the defending World Series champion Dodgers, who did not look good yesterday. Their ace Clayton Kershaw got worked in Colorado. It's typically a place where breaking balls don't break, and that was the case yesterday. Yeah, it wasn't a great start for the Dodgers, the defending World Series champs going down to the Colorado Rockies, the team that got rid of their best player for hot dog parts in the offseason. And the Dodgers just did not look very good yesterday. Okay, so what was my biggest takeaway in this game? The World Series champs are pretty good. And this is why I say this. The Dodgers played a dreadful game. As I mentioned, Kershaw did not look great. The Dodgers committed two really costly errors, one from Corey Seager, who I picked to win the MVP this year at shortstop. There were two wild pitches from Jimmy Nelson that allowed the Rockies to plate two runs. I saw one of the most insane plays I've ever seen on the baseball diamond. You think you've seen it all when you watch a baseball game. I mean, this game's been going on for hundreds of years. You've seen it all, right? I have never seen a home run turned into an RBI single out. I've never seen that before. We saw that yesterday. So it was errant base running by one of the leaders in that franchise in Justin Turner. It was a dreadful, dreadful game for the Dodgers. Plus, they were on the road. Still, even with that, at the end of the game, LA had bases loaded and Mookie Betts represented the go-ahead run at the plate. So for everything that went wrong yesterday, the Dodgers were 3 of 16 with runners in scoring position. They left 14 on base. They still had a chance to get that win yesterday. My takeaway, now you're a pretty good baseball team when that happens. Okay, complete opposite of what went down with the San Francisco Giants. And this was a game that I watched last night, Giants-Mariners. I could not turn it off. I couldn't turn it off. I initially turned this game on because, for one, I love West Coast baseball because it's late at night. You know, the kids are in bed. My wife is typically sleeping. It's quiet in the house. I can turn on West Coast baseball, and I'm thoroughly entertained. Aside from the fact that it was opening day, late night West Coast baseball, for me, it's always the best. The Giants last night received a gem from Kevin Gausman. He gave up two hits and one earned run through six innings. I mean, he was brilliant. Giants are up 6-1. He leaves. They go to the bullpen. And all of a sudden, it became 6-2. And that Giants lead of 4 all of a sudden was in jeopardy because the Mariners had bases juiced. And Jarlin Garcia comes in a relief effort, and Taylor Trammell, in his first ever big league appearance, worked a beautiful quality at bat, earns a walk, and all of a sudden, it's 6-3. Kapler goes to the bullpen. Tyler Rogers comes in. Gives up a double to Dylan Moore. The Mariners make it 6-5. We had a weak ground ball hit the Brandon Belt at first. Should have been a double play. There's one out. He throws it away. All of a sudden, the Mariners hold the lead. A sixth spot in the eighth inning. It's 7-6 Mariners. Giants answer back. Alex Dickerson, pinch hit, one solo shot home run, goes deep. Then we go into extra innings. And all the Mariners had to do in the bottom of the 10th inning was literally stand there. Because we saw three straight walks to end the game. Don't forget, in extra innings, we still have a runner starting on second base. So it was Evan Longoria starting at second for the Giants in the top of the 10th. They could do nothing with it. Mariners get a runner to start on second. And three straight walks in the bottom of the 10th inning. That ends opening day with a walk-off walk. That game was fantastic. Like I said, complete opposite of the Dodgers. The Giants were in a position to get a victory, and this is a team that's not great. Foran Zahidi still has a lot of work to do with this Giants organization. But they were in a spot to cruise to a victory on the road against Seattle. They couldn't finish it off. That's the difference between those two teams. And look, I'll stick with the NL West when I say this. The San Diego Padres, who picked up a win yesterday over the Diamondbacks, they had to work for it. And I had this suspicion going into the season that I don't know if I trust a bullpen more than San Diego in the National League. I mean, they essentially have three high-leverage relievers that I believe could end the season with 15 to 20 saves, three of them. They go to Emilio Pagan, who pitches one inning, gets the win. They go to Drew Pomeranz, who could be a closer for 28 teams in Major League Baseball. And then they go to Mark Melancon to come in and close the game out, and he earns a save. When you think of a 1-2-3 that you're going to see in innings 7, 8, 9, I don't believe there's a better bullpen than the Padres. That was obvious to me last night. And again, I don't believe anyone was questioning the offensive firepower from the Padres. But if you were, if by chance you were, you weren't sold on the massive deal for Fernando Tatis, you're not a fan of Manny Machado for whatever reason, you don't believe that Jake Cronenworth can duplicate what he did last season, the Diamondbacks made history in this game. They become the first team in Major League Baseball history with a 4-home-run inning, and still the Padres found a way to win, coming from behind with a run in the sixth and the one in the seventh to take the lead for good. And that massive bullpen closes things out. NL West is going to be a lot of fun. Now, what am I... Well, I shouldn't say one. I'm going to say the two other teams that I'm highly intrigued with in the National League, the Nationals and the Mets. That series has been postponed. That's unfortunate because I cannot wait to watch that series. Everything that the Mets have done in the offseason, Jacob deGrom with that type of offensive firepower, Francisco Lindor in a Mets uniform, the stellar outfield that New York possesses, I can't wait to see it. The Nationals, Juan Soto, to me, is the most exciting young player in baseball. Plus, you have that rotation of Scherzer and Strasburg and Corbin and John Lester. I can't wait for that series. Unfortunately, we're going to have to wait a little bit longer. So those were my takeaways in the National League. The Dodgers are really, really good, even though they came up short yesterday. Worst case scenario in every single aspect of that game, they still had a chance to get a win. The Giants are going to be bad. We saw it. That bullpen is awful. And, of course, the Padres have an unreal arsenal of offensive talent, but the bullpen is outstanding. Those are my big takeaways in the National League. And I think all that's factual. Like, we knew that going into the season. Yesterday, it just solidified all those thoughts. Then we go to the American League. And the biggest disappointment for me, it was the Oakland A's yesterday. They were the biggest disappointment of any team because I like Oakland to come out of the American League. I picked them to represent the American League in the World Series. I love what the A's have to offer. They were dreadful yesterday. And it's a marquee matchup against the Houston Astros. They were so bad. And Zach Greinke was so good. So if you are a Houston Astros fan, it's been rough over the last couple of years. It has. It's been a rough patch for this team. Greinke yesterday, a quality start. Six innings, three hits, no earned runs, strikes out four. The bullpen worked beautifully yesterday. It was a great, great day for the Houston Astros. It was a horrible, horrible day for the Oakland A's. That was my biggest disappointment. And we know that fans have not forgiven the Houston Astros for the cheating scandal, and I'm going to refer to it as a cheating scandal because that's exactly what it is. The boos were incredible yesterday. Last year, we were talking about how this works out better for Houston, no fans in the stands, because they would have just gotten pelted by boos all season long. 1 year away, maybe the fans are going to forget a little bit. No, they didn't. They did not forget. And that's a rabid fan base in Oakland to begin with. But just going down the list of the offensive struggles yesterday, Olsen and Chapman combined 0 for 6 in the plate. Moreland was not good. Jed Lowry, who we haven't seen play baseball in a really long time, you know, because that whole tenure with the New York Mets, that was a disaster. Lowry goes back. What does he do yesterday? Nothing. 0 for 3. I mean, the offense production for the A's was just awful. That was the biggest disappointment for me. We saw some stellar performances on the pitcher's mound in the AL. I just mentioned Zach Greinke. How about the 2020 AL Cy Young winner, Shane Bieber? Struck out 12 batters, got no run support. Tigers get a 3-1 lead heading into the ninth. Roberto Perez makes things interesting, but Gregory Soto comes in, forces a pop out, game's over. Bieber strikes out 12 in this game and gets absolutely no run support. That's the gift and the curse of Major League Baseball. Bieber gets the 3-2 loss after just a dominating performance. And really, when you look at the Cy Young winners coming into this year, everybody talked about Trevor Bauer because he was a free agent. He's outlandish. He's brash. I don't know how he's going to fit in the Dodger clubhouse. I think that's a big question. And he switched teams. He went from the Reds to the best team in baseball, the World Series champs. Nobody's talking about Bieber. That guy can flat out play, and he was dynamic yesterday. Those were some of my big takeaways on opening day. Loved it. Sad that we only had one day game. But we do have some great contests coming up tonight. We'll see the World Series champ Dodgers back in action, 6:40 as they take on the Rockies. I have to tune into the Houston-Oakland game at 7:40. Javier going up against Lizardo. Those are probably the top matchups. Arizona-San Diego tonight as well. Blake Snell is going to be on the mound for the Padres, his first game in a Padre uni. So we have some great baseball games coming up tonight. But opening day, it's fantastic. It's like March Madness of baseball. We got games all day long. Speaking of March Madness, we're going to break down the Final Four here in just a moment. Let's take one more commercial break. We'll come back, put the final touches on this edition of the show, this week of the show. We'll talk March Madness. That's coming up next right here on Drive Time Sports.
I understand you're a real sports fan.
Well, then there's only one answer.
Turn on the radio. You'll never have to compromise again.
You're listening to Drive Time Sports with Jordan Buscarini on KOAL 107.3 FM at 750 AM.
This song right here, it's called The Underdog.
You got no fear of the underdog. That's why you will not survive.
Yeah, we still have an underdog floating in the NCAA tournament. Tomorrow, the Final Four, we get number one Baylor taking on number two Houston. That game scheduled for a 3:15 start time. And then in the nightcap at 6:30, it's Gonzaga against UCLA. And I've said this throughout the tournament. You cannot refer to UCLA as Cinderella. You can't. This is not UMBC. This is not VCU. This is not Virginia Commonwealth. Remember when Shaka Smart took his play-in VCU team all the way to the Final Four? That's not UCLA. I refuse to give them that tag, Cinderella. We love that term in March Madness. We love it. And I know why we love it, because we love a good underdog story. Yeah, they're an underdog, but they're not Cinderella. You can't possess the athletic budget that UCLA has and be considered Cinderella. It doesn't work that way in college athletics. Are they a good story? Yeah, they're a fantastic story. And the reason being, Mick Cronin is a fantastic coach. I don't think we should be surprised by this. I think Cronin was the guy that UCLA fans thought they were getting with Steve Alford. Cronin's that guy. They have a lot of talent. Ju Zhang, a Kentucky transfer. They've done things the right way. Like, this is a team that's fully capable. Fully capable of making a run like this. And while it's been massively fun to watch a Pac-12 team have this type of success in the tournament, I think it comes to an end tomorrow. Because, I mean, UCLA has gone through just a gauntlet to get to the Final Four. They have an edge in that regard. I mean, you look at the fact that they beat Alabama. There's your two seed. They beat Michigan. They beat Michigan State. they waxed BYU. It was a tough road to get to the Final Four. They haven't played a team like Gonzaga. There is a reason why Gonzaga is on the verge of becoming the first team in 45 years to win a national championship undefeated. There's a reason why. But they've been even better in the NCAA tournament. Here's a statistic that I came across on a per-possession basis. Gonzaga has actually outscored its opponents in the NCAA tournament so far by more than it did its conference opponents. I mean, this kind of dominance, it's unheard of. And I'm not going to say that this is one of the greatest college basketball teams we've ever had. I'm not going down that route. I'm just saying the dominance that Gonzaga has put on display so far, it is unheard of. Their journey to the Final Four is the complete opposite of UCLA. The Bruins had a battle from behind to beat Michigan State. They beat BYU relatively easy. But the Alabama game was difficult. The Michigan game came down to the wire. They had to rely on defense at the end. These have been close games that UCLA had to eke out. That's not the case for Gonzaga. A 43-point win over Norfolk State. A 16-point win over Oklahoma. An 18-point win over Creighton. Then they get a red-hot USC team, and they beat them by 19. You know how dominant Gonzaga has been in this tournament? They haven't led by less than 9 points in the second half of any of their games so far. Think about that. They have carried nearly a double-digit lead the entire second half of every tournament game on their way to the Final Four. That's how dominant Gonzaga has been. I like UCLA. It's a great story. I love Mick Cronin. UCLA hasn't seen a buzzsaw like this. And if UCLA finds a way to top Gonzaga, they may in fact win the national championship. And then in that regard, we have to look at the most difficult championship route ever. That's when I start talking hyperbole and legacy. UCLA has a couple of signature wins. They play tough basketball. They haven't seen a buzzsaw like this. I mean, Corey Kispert shooting 47% from the three-point line for Gonzaga. Jalen Suggs is averaging 14 points and 5 assists. And when you talk about the role players that this team has, they are so loaded. And then, of course, for this game, we get to see Adam Morrison crying on the floor after UCLA rallied to beat a very good Gonzaga team years ago. Then on the flip side, we get Baylor and Houston. And I was of the mindset going into the NCAA tournament, like the Final Four, I only got two teams still in my Final Four in my bracket. But the national championship game to me was pretty easy to peg at the beginning. Two best teams in the country are Baylor and Gonzaga. Again, if you watch college basketball, I think you probably could have pegged that. No guarantee it happens. But to have these two teams in the Final Four on the opposite sides of the bracket, I'm not surprised by the least. And one of the reasons I fell in love with Baylor is because from a potency standpoint, good luck finding a better backcourt than what they have. Talking about Jared Butler and Mikhail Teague, Davion Mitchell. I mean, together, these three averaged close to 50 points a game. And I was just talking about the three-point shooting for Gonzaga. Baylor has that. I believe they lead the nation in three-point shooting, correct? 41%. They lead the country in three-point shooting. And so in my mind, out of the two best teams, it's Gonzaga and Baylor. And it's nothing against Houston, because if you love defensive basketball, you love the Cougars. Right? I mean, when you look at field goal percentage defense, well, they've held teams in this tournament to 55 points per game. All right, so they do things very well on the defensive side of the ball. But my biggest knock on the NCAA tournament has always been we rarely see the two best teams play in the national championship. We've seen the best team of the country win a title, but when it's a single elimination tournament, and well, it's March Madness for a reason, right? It's not predictable. And when things aren't predictable, rarely do the best teams over a large sample size meet up in the national championship. If Gonzaga beats UCLA, and if Baylor defeats Houston, we will have a national championship featuring the two best teams in the country, and I don't believe any college basketball fan or analyst can deny that. If those two teams get wins tomorrow, I'm looking forward to it. The Final Four is going to be a lot of fun. We have so many different storylines. Houston's defense against Baylor. Can they slow down this perimeter attack? Can UCLA's run, unprecedented run as an 11 seed in the first four under Mick Cronin, can it continue through the buzzsaw that's Gonzaga? Love the matchups that we get in the Final Four tomorrow. We are out of time on this edition of Drive Time Sports. Always a pleasure to be along with you. Coming up, Utah Jazz basketball tonight. Live coverage will begin at 6:50, and I will be back on Monday as we preview the national championship in college basketball. We'll also tie it into the NBA draft. We'll talk about that on Monday. Have a great, safe weekend. I am out.